Hello, Internet. This is Ewan Spence, and yes, the Insight calling. You see, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping. The Poe Museum had brought me coffee, so let's sit down and do some chatting. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to another chat over coffee, and it's time to get a voice that is so much of an expert, you didn't realise how much you needed to know. Yes, the Austrian song this year packs a ridiculous amount into 3 minutes, but the clue is in the title. Who the hell is Edgar? We find out later on in the song that it's Edgar Allan Poe. But the big question is, who is Edgar Allan Poe? And I can't really answer that beyond, oh, isn't he the guy that wrote that thing that James Earl Jones did with the poetry with the Raven and the Simpsons? There is a lot more to that man. And to help me, I've got the curator of the Poe Museum from America, Chris Sintner. Welcome to the pod. Welcome to having a chat over coffee with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, there's a Poe Museum, which kind of suggests he's a pretty big thing.
Oh, there's four Poe Museums, but we're the best. We're the only one that has a piece of his coffin.
What?
Well, 26 years after he died, they moved his body. And the coffin fell apart, appropriate for Poe, and gave everybody the last good scare. And people grabbed chunks of the coffin. And we've got a big old hunk of that coffin here at the Poe Museum, along with a lock of his hair. We've even got Edgar Allan Poe's socks. In case you ever wondered what Poe's socks look like, we got them here.
How much of that do you need to actually rebuild his body?
Yeah, we know how tall he was. We know how much he weighed. So maybe if we get a little bit of DNA, we could put him all back together. The bones, they're still in the ground, and we're not sure what good condition they're in. And I guess the cemetery might have some objections to us taking the bones.
Yeah, there's a Netflix serial in there somewhere. But yeah, four museums, being America, there's always got to be competition between everything. I suppose, though, that speaks to just how much of an impact his life has had in multiple creative endeavors.
Yeah, it speaks to a couple of things. First of all, he invented the detective story. This is 46 years before the first Sherlock Holmes mystery came out. He was a pioneer of science fiction. He wrote a story about a trip to the moon back when Jules Verne was only 7 years old. And he wrote a new kind of psychological horror story that focused less on ghosts and curses and castles than it did on ordinary people, just like you or me, who sometimes go a little bit mad. And of course, he also wrote some of the best known poetry in the English language. Of course, The Raven is the one everybody remembers. It's the only one that has an American football team named after it. The only poem that somebody thought to name the football. There's even a beer named after the Raven. It's called the Raven Beer Company. And on the picture, on the label, it says the taste is poetic. And there was even a professional wrestler who called himself the Raven for a while. And he would say, quoth the Raven, nevermore at the end of the match. And so this is really caught on. And in addition to being Poe's broad-ranging influence, his continuing popularity, there's four Poe museums because he kept moving around all the time. He was the first major American writer to try to make a living just off of his writing. And sometimes that meant that he had to travel from city to city, working at one magazine then another, and giving public readings and lectures and whatever it took to cobble together a living. It's something he was trying to map out for himself.
In terms of the average wage when he was living, did he earn a lot? Or was it just subsistence? How much earning power could he have creatively when he was alive?
Not much. He was making, maybe the common day laborer would make about what Poe was making, because they weren't paying writers very much. He did have some editing jobs, but he often quit or got fired after about a year or so. He didn't handle authority very well, didn't take orders. And he realized, and this is back in 1840s dollars, he was making about $800 a year working one of the biggest magazines in the country, but the owner's making $25,000 a year. So he realized the owner's making a lot more than I am, and I'm doing all the work. I'm editing and I'm writing new stories. I'm writing book reviews and essays, keeping the magazine running, but still this owner sits back and he reaps all the benefits. So Poe never made a whole lot of money. And he would sort of cobble together things by writing for different magazines at the same time, freelancing a lot. So one magazine, he might write an article about the road improvements, while at another one, he's writing an article about a murder trial. Then at the same time, he's writing a book about seashells. And his seashell book was his best-selling book during his lifetime. He got paid $50 for it, which is about half a year's rent for the kind of places he lived. So imagine for that one book, it went into multiple editions, and it really was just about shells, just about seashells. But it sold better than a lot of his earlier stories, especially the comedies. People didn't think he was very funny all the time. And sometimes his stories are funny up until the guy gets set on fire, gets his head chopped off, kind of ruins the mood a little bit. But I think his comedies would appeal a lot more to today's audiences than it did to 1840s and 1830s audiences, because his sense of humor was a little bit dark at times.
I suppose it's a really tough question to go, what do you think he would have made of all of this deification 150, 60, 70 years later after his death? Did he have any sort of forward-looking in his writing? Was it always of the moment, or did he sort of cast out further?
Well, he always thought that he was something great. He let people know. He wasn't afraid to tell people that he was the greatest. And even when he's 20 years old, he wrote this letter that says, you know, I'm not yet 20, but I know I'm a poet. If deep worship of all things beautiful can make me one, and I give the world to embody just half the ideas that float in my imagination. So this is a guy that knew he was bound for great things, and he knew that the Raven was going to live on. Even in his day, people were writing about saying, this poem will stick to the memory of anyone who ever reads it. So Poe said, you know, I'm doing something special. But the thing is, he thought the stories we'd still be reading were some of the ones we don't read as much, like Ligeia or Morella. He thought those were the big ones. But in his time, it was his detective stories. Everyone wanted to read The Murders in the Rue Morgue or The Purloined Letter. And also his stories about mesmerism were very popular. Don't read much about the facts in the case of M. Valdemar. It's about mesmerizing a man at the moment of death to keep his mind alive after his body's dead. They keep him in a trance for 7 months. And when he finally wakes him up from a trance, he just dissolves into a pool of goo before their very eyes. Or as Poe says, a pile of loathsome, of detestable putrescence. And people thought that was a true story. And Poe would even say, no, I made it up. It's a hoax. But they wouldn't believe that he'd made it up. Even appeared in medical journals in England. And we've got a pamphlet here published in London in 1846, passing off as a true story of the powers of mesmerism to arrest death. So Poe was starting to get popular in his lifetime, and people knew him. He knew Charles Dickens. Dickens had come to the United States in 1842, and they met, and they continued to correspond. He knew Elizabeth Barrett Browning. He wrote her a letter, and he dedicated his book, The Raven and Other Poems, to Elizabeth Barrett Browning. Of course, she wrote to Robert Browning and said, I don't know how I feel about having a book of poetry like that dedicated to me. You know, poems about conqueror worms and that sort of thing.
I find that amazing that he's there with Dickens.
Yeah, Dickens was having the same problems. International copyright laws. There wasn't an international copyright law until well after both their deaths. So when Dickens published something over there, it got reprinted over here without him getting paid anything. When Poe got something published over here, it only took a few weeks for the ship to get over to Liverpool, and they'd all of a sudden start publishing over there, and then before you know it, spread over to continental Europe. And neither one were getting paid for all these multiple printings. And even in the United States here, you could copyright a book, but you couldn't copyright a poem. So as soon as you got paid your little pittance for publishing one magazine, the next magazine is going to publish it within a couple weeks. So why does the first one want to pay you that much? It's not worth it to pay you much, because they can easily just, you know, wait a couple weeks and get it for free. So that's why Poe had to supplement his income by giving lectures and giving readings. He had a really great dramatic presence, and he would perform The Raven on stage and just leave people chilled. And he sort of understood that you needed multiple income streams to try to make a living just off your writing. And as I told you before, he was really charting out the path of how to survive from your writing, your creative work. Before him, writers in the United States were people with family money, or they had teaching jobs or professors. They were lawyers. They were diplomats. They didn't need to make a living from their writing. But Poe, for some reason, just at the age of 18, he said, I want to be a poet, and that's what I'm going to do. And his hero was this British poet, Lord Byron, who came up with Family Money. So he was trying to model himself after a British aristocrat, but he wasn't an aristocrat. This is a guy who at age 18, he dropped out of college. Then he enlisted in the U.S. Army. He left after 2 years, went to a military academy, got kicked out of there. Intentionally, he wanted to get kicked out of there. This guy living hand to mouth, but he said, for some reason, poetry is worth it. Writing's worth it, expressing these ideas, because he always believed in his genius, and he always believed that he was going to take off one day and people were really going to acknowledge. And The Raven was such a big hit. Little kids falling down the street going, nevermore, nevermore. He'd flap his arms like a big bird. But he didn't make that much money off it. So that's why he went on a lecture tour. That's why Charles Dickens came to the States and he gave lectures here, because he was raking in the money lecturing here, at least making some money off all these people who knew his works. So Poe said, I'm going to rake in some money reading The Raven and Annabelle Lee. And there was a market for Poe.
So you have personal appearances. Presumably he's going to sign manuscripts and pamphlets and books whenever he's out doing these lecture circuits, yeah?
Yeah, he's selling books.
Yeah, so we've got merch selling. We've got multiple income streams. We've got somebody who's better than you, who has rich parents that is financing you. We've got editors taking all the money and leaving very little for the creatives. This is sounding like a very 21st century story, it has to be said, Chris.
That's the same stuff we hear today. I mean, there's all these different streaming services, and as, say, a musician or songwriter, you don't really have a choice to get your music out there, and you've got to find a way. Well, you might stream some things on different sites. You might have to go do live shows. You might have to sell T-shirts. Poe should have sold T-shirts. They'd be a hit.
How much turnover is there in the Poe industry nowadays?
There's always new stuff coming out, and his work is all in the public domain now, so there's new movies coming out. Netflix just had a show with Poe as a character, and later this year there's going to be another series called The Fall of the House of Usher. So you never know. I just met a guy yesterday who's making another Telltale Heart film, but somebody else made another Telltale Heart film earlier this year, and then everybody can make Poe T-shirts. I've got a couple different T-shirts that say, I'm just a Poe boy from a Poe family. Everybody's come up with that pun, but there's also one with Poe as a tree that says Poe tree, or one with Poe with an umbrella that says when it rains, it Poes. So as long as you got that name, the name rhymes with just about everything. Poe, flow, go, show. That's what makes such a good refrain for that song. Poe, 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 Poe.
What do you make of that song?
Yeah, I heard about it on Twitter, and then I tried it out, and the video's online, and it really has a catchy refrain, but it always reminds you at the beginning of the song, they're really hopeful. We've got it made, you know, call up Universal. We're going to be stars. And then ends, you know, reality sets in that, hey, this is a hard life. Songwriting and music is going to be a challenge, and we've got something to face up against. And how do we do that? And it looks like at the end, they just said, at least it pays to be funny. And Poe at the end of his life was saying that, you know, I wouldn't give up the life of writing for all the gold of California, because what really matters to the poet is what I've been able to achieve, the respect of my peers and the appreciation of beauty and nature and things that you can't really buy. And Poe sort of understood that sometimes with the creative life, your reward is the stuff that you can't buy, because you might not get much of a monetary reward.
So how did Edgar Allan Poe come into your life?
Well, when I was little, I was in school. I must have been about 10 years old, and our librarian had us read Never Bet the Devil Your Head. It's one of Poe's comedies, and I just thought, oh, this is a funny little story. And then we read Hop Frog, which I thought was a funny story. Never Bet the Devil Your Head is Poe's only story with a moral, because back then they thought that a story should teach you something. It should edify you, make a better person. But Poe said, no, a story should entertain you. That's the whole purpose. It should thrill you, make you feel something. And the transcendentalist poets like Ralph Waldo Emerson were complaining that Poe, oh, he just wrote stuff that's for effect. It's not for instruction. So his one story with a moral was Never Bet the Devil Your Head. It's about this guy called Toby Dammit. And he was a rotten kid. He'd grown up rotten. He was smoking and drinking when he was 2 years old. And he would always bet the devil your head he could do something. I bet the devil my head I can race you. I can bet the devil my head I can jump over this. So at the end of the story, he says, I bet the devil my head I can jump over that turnstile in the middle of that covered bridge. And a little old man shows up and says, I'll take your bet. And Toby, damn it, runs and runs. He jumps over the turnstile. He knocks his head off on the beams of the covered bridge, and the little man catches his head and runs off. So he shouldn't have bet the devil his head. And then they say afterwards, he came down with the case of the transcendentals because he didn't have his head anymore. So Poe thought that stuff was hilarious.
And that certainly reminds me, I think I've seen that, but I think it was a Fellini film with Terrence Stamp in the mid-60s.
Yeah, Spirits of the Dead. And they use race cars. And people ask me, what was that story that Poe wrote about the cars? And, oh, you mean Never Bet the Devil Your Head.
What impact did that have on you, reading that?
Well, it stuck with me. It made me think that, hey, there's somebody with my kind of sense of humor out there. This can actually be fun. This isn't the stuff that our teachers want us to read it. Maybe she let us know about this by accident. Maybe this was a mistake. And the time you get to The Cask of Amontillado, you start to appreciate that Poe wrote a lot of humor. There's humor in even the darkest horror stories. In The Cask of Amontillado, the victim, Fortunato, is going down to the wine cellars, which turn out to be the catacombs, with Montresor. And Fortunato starts coughing. And Montresor says, oh, dear, your health is precious. We must go back. I cannot take you down here. And Fortunato says, oh, it's just nothing. Just a cough. I shall not die of a cough. And Montresor says, you're very right. You will not die of a cough. And we all know the story. It doesn't go well for old Fortunato. So I loved getting the humor in there. And these stories really do stick with you. When you're a kid, you read them. And then when you're adult, you still remember, oh, that's the story about the heart beating underneath the floorboards. That's the story where they get bricked up behind the wall. And really some iconic tales. He kept them simple and eliminated unnecessary details. And they're usually pretty short stories, which appeal to young readers. So around here, we have 12 and 13-year-olds reading these stories in school.
To someone who is a creative, if you've been able to say to him, oh, look, hundreds of years in the future, 100 and a bit, you're being used in schools. People are still referring to you. People are still creating new material because of you. Do you think he knew he was going to be as influential?
Yeah, he probably did. I mentioned he had a little bit of an ego. He had a lot of self-esteem. So he would have said, why aren't there 10 Poe museums? Why don't you have a bigger monument to me? These statues aren't big enough. I'm Edgar Poe here. I invented a detective story. And he always thought the people that people back then were praising were overrated, overbloated, like Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Poe said he was a quack, followed by a legion of literary quackery who had no original ideas, but just stole other people's ideas. And Longfellow back then, he was getting all the praise. He's got his name in Westminster Abbey, and Poe doesn't. But Poe's the one we're still reading today. Poe's the one who's still getting movies based on his work, comic books, video games, toys, bobbleheads. We have Poe boxer shorts in the gift shop. You can buy Edgar Allan Poe boxer shorts. They're called polka dot shorts. Poe's in The Simpsons. He's on South Park. He keeps popping up different places because he's become more than just a writer. He's become sort of a literary figure, almost a caricature of the doomed artist. I think Charles Baudelaire said he was born to lose stamped on his forehead. And this is a guy who just never quite fit in, but never gave up. He was always on the outside looking in. He was sort of the James Dean of poetry. And that's why later writers and visual artists sort of look back to this guy. This guy's our brother. This guy's somebody who can relate to us, can understand that we've been through. And in Poe's poetry, see, he's really gone through a lot of this stuff that his young readers would know about. Heartbreak, loss, death. And he's overcome it through his art. And in the end, all he has is his art. He doesn't have anything financially to back him up, but he's still got that art. And he can look back and say, yeah, I wrote that. I contributed that.
And there's also, I mean, we have to turn to his death. You said James Dean there, another person in popular culture who died very early. Poe was the same.
Yeah, Poe was 40 years old and he was about to get married. He'd hooked up with his girlfriend when they were teenagers. They were 15 when they first met, and they become engaged when they were 16. They were about to be married, but her father broke off the engagement by intercepting Poe's love letters to her from college. So she married somebody else. He married somebody else. But by this time, his wife has died. Her husband has died. They finally got back together. They're about to live happily ever after. As soon as he gets back from a business trip to New York. So he left Richmond, where she lived, and was headed to New York and stopped in Baltimore on the way. And he was found 4 days later, semi-conscious, dressed in somebody else's clothes at a polling place on election day. He was taken to the hospital, but this was 1849. So very well, the doctor might look you up and down and say, you know what your problem is? You got too much blood in there. Let's leech you, or let's cut open a vein and bleed you out a little bit. That'll make you feel better. Let's give you some mercury pills. Suppose in the hospital for 4 days, but it probably didn't help him much. The doctor said he was delirious. He was in and out of consciousness. He was talking to shadows in the wall, not making any sense. He screamed the name Reynolds over and over again. So we still don't know who Reynolds was or what Reynolds had to do with Poe's death. Maybe he stole Poe's clothes, or maybe he was an election judge at the polling place where they found him. But we don't know. His last words were, "Lord, help my poor soul." The doctor said he died of a case of phrenitis, which means inflammation of the brain, which could mean meningitis, encephalitis, rabies. There's even a theory that maybe it was delirium tremens, maybe it was something else. If he were in a hospital today, we'd probably know what killed him. But since it was back then, they just didn't know. They said, oh, brain fever. But those are still the days you could die of a broken heart or old age. So it's not much of a stretch. Oh, he died of brain fever.
And at the age of 40 as well.
Yeah. But by then he'd outlived a lot of people in his life. His parents died in their 20s. His brother died at 24. His wife died at 24. So life wasn't quite as long back then.
But he has left one of the largest collections of work that is still studied, that still entertains, that is still read, and is still being discovered.
Oh, yeah. They're still finding new letters that turn up here and there. And they're finding out new things about him. And people are still digging into the works and finding he operated on multiple levels. Even the story itself, there's multiple levels because we have unreliable narrators. So the narrator's lying to us. The story is something other than what the narrator's telling us. But also there's another level that we can understand. Oh, this is what he's really talking about. He's really critiquing slavery. Or he's critiquing westward expansion. He's writing about something else in addition to all these other things. So that's why a lot of readers can keep digging into these works over and over and catch things you wouldn't have caught when you were 10 years old. When I was 10 years old, I didn't know who the Transcendentalists were. But when I reread the story later, I said, oh, yeah, he's smack talking Emerson there.
So we've got people listening, listening to the song, listening to this podcast. I'll assume that everybody's aware of the Raven and is aware of that portrait that's postered up everywhere. But we've got poetry, we've got books, we've got letters. Where would you say to someone who says, I want to start reading some of his stuff? Where should they start?
You just go online and find his stories just about everywhere since they're all in the public domain. But if you caught a collection of his books, I'd start with The Telltale Heart and The Cask of Amontillado. And those stories will get you started. Those are a great introduction. And from there, Berenice, it's his story about a man obsessed with his wife's teeth. Good old fun time there. And Hop Frog, about a court jester who takes revenge on his wicked king. And maybe even a love story like Eleonora or The Oval Portrait, where love goes wrong and turns into obsession. And then for the poetry, if you do read the poetry, you have to read it out loud. You've really got to get the music of it. Poe called poetry the rhythmical creation of beauty. He didn't design it to sit on the page. It needs to be heard. So read The Raven out loud to yourself. Read it to your friends. Read Annabelle Lee outright. Read The Bells, The Tintinnabulation, So Musically Wells, From the Bells, 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 From the Chiming and the Rhyming of the Bells. You have to hear these things. You have to feel it. You almost have to dance them. If you can dance to The Raven, go for it.
And if I put in front of you a bookshelf with everything Poe had ever written, the one that you just pick up and go, ah, I just need to kick back, relax, wind, and just enjoy some of Edgar Allan Poe, what have you picked up?
I guess the coziest we get is Annabelle Lee. But then at the end, he's cozying up next to her tomb on the side of the sea. So It's cozy, but still a little bit uncomfortable.
Lots of work, lots of impact, but also the museum. You have the museum there as well.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the museum before we go. What is in there? Why is it so popular?
It's popular because people from around the world, they know Poe. We get visitors here every year from, you know, 30 or more different countries. Some people who've never read Poe in English until they got here. And he's a cultural phenomenon. He's somebody that people of all ages can really get into, whether you're a kid in school or adult rereading these for the fifth time. But there's something that really has appealed to people, and people feel like they know him. We've got a bust of Poe here in the garden, and people kiss him on the cheeks. I just wiped off more lipstick yesterday. They kiss him on the cheeks. They leave him presents, love letters. They're writing poetry. So even though Poe died back in 1849, people still feel like they know him, like he's part of the family. I think that's what keeps drawing people from all over the world to the Poe Museum, to at least see a piece of his life, to see the things that he owned. And it almost feels like you're standing face to face with him. This is about the closest you can get to seeing Poe in the flesh. Until we dig him up.
Indeed, yep. And you do have his socks as well, though. So
yeah, you got the socks. You got
the socks, we've got the coffin, we got the statue at the front, we've got everything we need. Chris, documenting such a fascinating life must be so enjoyable and so rich in culture and discovery, and it must take a very, very long time. So first of all, thank you very much for taking the time to come and talk to us here.
Well, thanks for having me.
And if people want to find out more about the Poe Museum and, you know, a little bit about the exhibits you have and where to find out more, they can head to the website.
Yeah, poemuseum.org.
And we will have a link back to that on our website. Chris, once again, thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks for having me. Nevermore.
You've been listening to AC Insights Chat Over Coffee with myself, Ewan Spence, and Chris Sintner of the Edgar Allan Poe Museum. Find out more at www.esinsight.com.